Before I get started this week, I wanted to give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a highly respected and heart-centered stress and TMS coach based in LA. After enduring 16 grueling years of chronic pain and illness, she healed herself completely and now is obsessed with guiding others in her signature one-on-one coaching program. With support, consistency, and accountability, clients learn to get out of pain and heal their symptoms for good. Now, Jeannie has something special just for you. It's a brand new free training. Start your journey with her 24-hour stress detox, a powerful mini course designed to give you a simple but effective reset in less than 15 minutes. You'll gain evidence-based tools and step-by-step guidance to complete your own stress detox. Stress, as we often discuss on the show, is a major contributor to TMS symptoms that impact your well-being, your relationships, and your career. If you're sick of feeling like this, then you deserve a detox. Ready to begin? Go to the show notes to sign up for immediate access. Welcome back to the show. I'm so happy that you're here. This week's interview is great. So years ago, I had Jennifer Huggins on the call, or sorry, on the show. She is a psychotherapist in Southern California, and she is back for another appearance. We talked a lot about a lot of things, but I think the biggest piece that I got out of this was around outcome independence, not freaking out when you get a new symptom, running to the doctor, and really just an overall paradigm shift. And so that's what a big part of this conversation is about. So I'm so excited for you to hear it. This is with Jennifer Huggins and I. You can check out her information in the show notes as well. Let's listen in. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Eddie Lindenstein. This is the second appearance on the podcast from this person, and as we record this, it's been 1,801 days since she was last on the podcast. So it was in, I'll give you the exact date. It was December 18th of 2019. It's a big time different world since then. But Jennifer Huggins is on the line. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Hi.
Thank you for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
It was nice to hear from you a couple of weeks ago. I re-aired that interview because I enjoyed it so much not that long ago, and that's kind of what sparked you getting in touch with me. So thanks for coming back.
Yeah, definitely. Good timing.
So I'm always kind of generally curious. You know, last time, and actually for the people that didn't listen 5 years ago and didn't hear for some reason a few weeks ago, where on planet Earth are you?
Yes. So I'm still in private practice.
Okay.
Part-time. I guess I could say part-time, but it sometimes feels like it's more than that. It just depends. But I'm also working for a company now, and the company's really cool. It's called Executive Mental Health. And what I get to do is work with geriatric patients.
Okay.
And geriatric patients that are in facilities, like skilled nursing facilities, et cetera, hospitals. And the work's a little bit different, but you know how rampant chronic pain is.
Yeah.
I get to still do my work there. Sometimes it looks a little bit different, but it can still be very, very satisfying because people, they start to feel better. Even if we're not approaching pain in a, you know, a depth emotional way that some geriatric patients can't do or don't have the capacity for, understanding for, I'm still working with pain. So I'm doing that and then working very strictly with chronic pain and trauma in my private practice still.
What, when you were like going through school and things like that, I guess like what kind of sparked your interest in this? And maybe not even from school, but it could have been totally when you finished school. But how long ago was it where you had sort of an interest in pain? And was there an experience that sort of pointed you in that direction?
Yes, there was. So in, you know, my last podcast with you, I talked about my own experience with chronic pain. And that was it. That's what sparked my interest. I don't think this would have been on my radar otherwise. So, you know, it was such a struggle for so long to get well and to recover, really, that after that, it became a raging passion of mine, and it still remains that way. And so I got into this work through health psychology, through my degree, and then went on to work at a functional restoration pain program, and then Kaiser Pain and other pain clinics. And then to move into my private practice working with chronic pain solely as a sole practitioner. So, yeah, definitely my own experience. And then also, seeing the outcomes of the work, seeing how pain really can recover. Chronic pain can really recover. And, you know, how often that can occur for people over the years, just seeing patient after patient, some patients, not every patient, you know, but seeing so many patients recover for their pain, with their pain, from their pain, has it fuels more passion. Fuels more passion to do the work, learn about the work, and get deeper into the work.
How, you know, something that has evolved a lot since the last time that we would have talked is there's been a lot of new, like not new, but presented neuroscience data, studies, information that's out there. How have you integrated that into the stuff that you've been doing over the last 5 years?
Yeah, absolutely. Understanding that's been quite helpful, learning about that. And I think it's this, in the same way that I've tried to present knowledge therapy, you know, Sarno knowledge therapy to clients, is through education and knowledge. They have to understand that their brain is really what is generating the pain. Way beyond, it's really not about the body anymore. I mean, even though the body is feeling the pain, the brain is the issue. And so when we get patients to understand that the neuroscience is coming out, that chronic pain isn't just long-term acute pain, that different brain regions are involved, that, you know, when the brain feels it's in danger, pain or, you know, pain equivalent symptoms can occur. When people start to understand, wow, you know, there's these brain regions that light up in the brain for chronic pain that are the same brain regions as emotional pain. That's a really big aha for a lot of patients when they see that, when they hear that, not see that, but when they hear that and they start to see the connections between their emotional pain and their physical pain. And we could kind of look at that in the brain circuitry and what's going on in the brain when chronic pain has persisted. Because it gets learned. So I talk to people a lot about that, talk to people about, you know, how pain's so subjective. The MRI scans, the MRI findings aren't always, you know, representative of pain. And when people see that there's been studies of that, study after study of that, even though it's not being representative in maybe medical or medicine, it can be comforting, and it can make people understand more what's going on and be less of a mystery and less confusing. And that can take the fear out of it.
Yeah. Can you talk, you said something a second ago that was making me think about the expectation of pain or conditioning. And that's like one of the toughest nuts to crack in some of the Sarno books that he talks about is like, you know, you have an expectation of pain. If I bend over and pick this particular thing up, it's going to hurt. If I stand on this foot, it's going to hurt. Can you talk about conditioned responses with your patients and just in general?
Absolutely. So conditioned responses, I think, are one of the biggest things that keeps pain going and maintains pain. And it's one of the more challenging phenomenons of TMS, PPD, neuroplastic pain, whatever they're calling it these days, right? There's a lot of different names. To keep, you know, it's one of the biggest things that keeps people afraid and in fear.
Yeah.
And fear is really the cornerstone of so much of this. So, you know, the higher your fear is, of like an activity or a behavior, the more likely that your brain is going to generate pain in that activity or that behavior, that thing you're doing. So, you know, we become conditioned in these activities to develop pain by our beliefs and by memories. You know, we've had an experience where maybe we bent. Bending is a big one for back pain, let's say. People bend, they get back pain, and a belief develops, right? And then fear develops. So the next time they go bend, like you said, very much, they anticipate the pain. Whether they anticipate it, they know they're anticipating it or not, their brain is, because it's become dangerous in their brain.
Yeah.
Because the pain is dangerous. So it's really more than anything, it's the pain is feared, the pain is a danger signal, and if people believe that bending is going to be causing pain, the next time they go bend, sure enough, that bending often does cause pain. So what we have to do is we have to realize it's a mindset. It's a paradigm shift. And the shift in mindset is far, far more paramount than focusing on any tool to make anything go away. So if we understand what conditioned responses are, and we look at inconsistencies, that's a big one in conditioned responses. Like sometimes I bend and there's pain, and sometimes I bend and there's not pain. You know, and when we can see that there's been an inconsistency, even one, that's huge.
Yeah.
Because then the problem is solved. And really, in essence, it might not be for the person, but we try to reinforce, like, okay, now that belief we've been holding that bending causes pain, that's now done. Because we've identified time or times where it hasn't occurred.
Yeah.
So if people could really look at that and see that as a truth, even if pain comes up when they're bending, they can begin to not take it so seriously.
Yeah. One thing, this came up on an interview I did just a couple of hours ago, with somebody who's an athlete, and she sustained in high school, she had a pretty serious knee injury. So she had a ACL, LCL, and, I think a PCL tear. And one thing that we were talking about though was, increasing levels of tension in the body due to TMS, right? And how maybe that could have been, you know, sort of predisposed her to maybe that injury occurring. I know you're not an orthopedist. If you don't feel comfortable answering that question or this question, then let me know. But I'm curious on that because I think of TMS pain in a couple of different ways. On one hand, it's more of a sensory type of a thing where like there's no apparent injury in my hand, but if my hand hurts, it could be very much a TMS thing. But comment a little bit on an element of, if there is one, about increased levels of tension in a particular body part that might predispose somebody to have an injury. Is there anything behind that?
Gosh, yeah. I mean, I would imagine if we're having increased levels of tension in the body, then our nervous system is hyperactive. It's hypervigilant. It's overactive or sympathetic nervous system. Tension and tightness in the body is generally a sign of anxiety, right?
Yeah.
And so that means we're upregulated. So if we're already upregulated, we may have an event that happens, aka an injury, right? And pain then turns on.
Yep.
Our brain uses that experience to turn pain on, right? And I believe that the tension itself maybe the pain, maybe a big part of what's generating pain, but the injury is what's being blamed for it.
What about, talk about some of the tools that some people use sometimes for getting out of pain. And a lot of them have been very successful for a lot of people for a long time. Journaling or meditation or, you know, some of the different things that are out there. Talk about some of those from the perspective of a therapist and how, and maybe this is parlayed into a bigger question, which is when you're working with, aside from knowledge therapy, and maybe that is it, what sort of things do you teach or talk about with people in private practice?
Yeah. What I've found and knew and have found to be more and more true as I practice is that it's a fine line between using TMS tools and having it be a form of outcome dependence. So, you know, there's this idea, this concept, this important concept of outcome independence, which we want to arrive at, which is really being independent of any outcome of pain, having an emotional independence of caring about the pain and thinking that it's good or it's bad, you know. So tools or things to get us out of TMS can be the very thing that keeps us in pain. Because what it can foster is outcome dependence, which is where we don't want to be.
Yeah.
Which is where we're depending on these external things, or we're internally fighting to make the pain go away through the use of the tools, right? And we're trying to find that perfect tool to make the pain go away. And then we're really right back where we started with preoccupation, you know, and not being independent of I myself and the pain is in my body, but it has nothing to do with an injury. It has nothing to do with me trying to make it go away more. that's not going to affect it. It's actually going to do the opposite. It's going to backfire. So some tools can backfire when we're trying to use them.
Expand on that, if you don't mind. I mean, it sounds like what you're saying is that, hey, me trying to get rid of, like, I could read a lot of these TMS books, and the intent of the book seems to be how to get out of pain. It's, you know, the books aren't called that, but it's essentially how to get out of pain. It sounds like what you're saying is how to get out of pain, or attempting it to get out of pain, is what's keeping you in the pain. Can you talk about that?
It could very much be, yeah. It could be a very stressful experience, you know, if we're trying really hard, especially true of perfectionists, right? Which is a personality type of persons who can get chronic pain and can be part of what maintains pain as well. So persons might try to find the perfect tool or the perfect way to heal or do the healing. I like the word resolution or recovery better than healing. It's a less physicalized term. When we're coming from a place of fear or despair, I think this backfires in terms of any tools helping. We want to come from a place of empowerment and confidence and knowledge. So knowledge therapy, yes, is a big part of it. Like, I'll give you an example of journaling. Journaling is a really big one that's purported as being an important tool for TMS. And I don't argue with that. However, I think sometimes people could journal too early. They can journal too early, too soon, before they're really understanding what where their pain's being generated. And also, more importantly, they haven't learned about emotions. They haven't learned really about their beliefs about, let's say, I call it the not okayness of having emotions.
Yeah.
Like rage or anger or sadness or grief or even love or joy. And they haven't opened up to the concept of feelings yet or even know what that is. They think their thoughts are feelings. So sometimes journaling can backfire because we come from a very cognitive, narrative, you know, maybe even anxious or ruminative place with our journaling. And we're just writing down, you know, I had a client the other day come to me, and, you know, I tell people to, when they, I call it free writing instead of journaling. I think journaling has a lot of connotations. So free writing is just a whole new thing. It's a whole new way we're going to quote unquote journal, free write. And so I had a client come to me the other day about, what I was going to say is I usually tell clients, you know, don't reread it when you're done. Cause we don't want to get all cognitive again. And, get rid of it, destroy it, so that you could really write in an authentic, you know, way and go as dark and deep as you need to without, you know, fearing that someone's going to find it. And that's the best way to be honest about how we're feeling. But, you know, I do a lot of work on emotions first before I think that patients can benefit from free writing, from journaling. And one way of doing that is having clients write down, you know, give it some real thought, and this can take a little time, and we can go over it even together. Like, what are some of the beliefs you've been holding that you may or may not even know you've been holding about why it's not okay to feel anger? Let's start with anger, since it's the most avoided emotion. You know, we could go to other ones too, sadness if we need to. But, you know, what are some of the beliefs you're holding? And what I get a lot from clients are, I'm going to explode. I'm going to lose my shit. You know, I'm going to ruin my relationships. I'm going to be embarrassed. You know, it'll be embarrassing when I, you know, explode.
Yeah.
It's really that fear of losing control with emotions. And so I think sometimes when people are journaling, there's that underlying fear of, or anxiety really, of their emotions. And so that can make journaling backfire as well.
So something that I have been thinking about lately is, and this came up again on this conversation I was having earlier today. One challenge, and this might be a very layered question, so maybe it's tough to answer, but talking about working with somebody who has, let's say they've had persistent pain for a couple of years. How do you as a therapist help them determine, and maybe there's not a determination, but this stems from instances from when you were 10 years old versus this is what's going on in your daily life. And those are the things to deal with. Can you talk about the two intersections there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one thing I think that's important is that, you know, And this is my stance and what I believe to be, and what I've learned is that we all have trauma of some sort, you know? And so there's that, and it's for people to understand that. We can't always narrow down, it's this emotional thing, but we can explore what's going on in a person's life. Like, I have a client right now who has been doing quite well. She's been doing quite well with the cessations, you know, it's lessened quite a bit and so forth, and then just got married. A lot of symptoms are starting again, panicking again, that kind of thing. So that can be a little more obvious. Well, we have this big event in our life, you know, maybe that has something to do with it, yeah. Right? So we just explore, like, you know, what is going on in your relationships? What's going on in your life? And I think more or less there's always going to be a component of that, right? And not to mention certain things in our life today, certain experiences we have with people, let's say, could be triggers to past events.
Yeah.
So it could be both. One of the same, if that makes sense. Like, you know, husband criticizes me. I feel, you know, angry towards him, whether they realize that or not. Father used to criticize me. So, you know, there may be some work to do around the past that's going to help us kind of temper our perception of our current experience and also help us understand that not only is that not an okay thing for a husband to criticize us, but it's also triggering from the past. So we have to do some work around the past. So it's just really understanding who's sitting in front of you and what their histories are, the extent of their trauma. And at any point in time, we can also feel emotions and not know exactly why they're there, but just feel them in the body and process them.
Can you talk a little bit more about the feeling in the body thing? What exactly? Because the word feelings, it's tough. Like, we know that they're called feelings, but then when you sort of when people have a tough time deciphering that their back pain could be connected to something besides a muscle strain or besides a herniated disc or whatever, you know, they feel the herniated disc, but then if you were to say the word feeling, like, that's kind of where the loss of connection is. So
big loss of connection.
Yeah. Try and relate pains in the body or sensations in the body, whatever word you want to use, and like really dumb it down for us.
As far as emotions and how they're
connected. Yeah, feelings, emotions, and like like you have somebody that comes to you and they've had persistent something pain for a couple of years and you start talking about feelings, how do you really dumb it down for somebody where it's completely foreign to them?
Emotions. Yeah. I generally tell people, you know, we have to differentiate what a thought is and what an emotion is. People all, you know, I may say, let's say I were to ask someone, how do you feel towards your husband for criticizing you? They may say, well, I think, you know, well, you know, I just think this, that, or the other, or they give a thought. Right. So a lot of times people confuse their thoughts with feelings. How I usually explain it in a simplified way is that, you know, we have four primary human emotions, that no matter what the situation is, we can and will feel one or more of the emotions towards a person, which is generally what it is, or maybe about the situation, which might be like a sad feeling. And those are anger, rage. That's one. Fear, sadness is two. Sadness, grief is two. Fear is three. And joy, love is four. Now, we have other emotions like guilt, shame, embarrassment. Those are emotions as well. They're just not primary.
Yeah.
Okay. And they may be there too, and we may need to look at those. So it's kind of like a map people can use. And I say emotions can be described in one word. So it's not a thought. It's one word. And so we start getting people to understand that, you know, emotions are not thoughts in the head, but feelings in the body that are a reaction to a stressor. Okay. And a big thing too is people think, you know, stress causes pain. And, you know, what I would say to that is stress doesn't cause pain, because otherwise we'd never get out of it.
Yeah.
Because there's always stressors, right? But what it is that it's our emotions about the stressful stimuli. that we're maybe not wanting to feel, we're not aware are there, we're scared of them. So, you know, it's explaining that, it's guiding people to their emotions when they're talking about a situation or a person or something, or they're starting to get anxious. That's another thing. I explained that anxiety is not an emotion.
Yeah.
Anxiety is a secondary emotion. It's a lid. So when we get anxiety, it's kind of like a check engine light. And it's like a ding, ding, ding. You know, if you're driving in your car and your check engine light goes off, it's telling you to look under the hood. This is an old metaphor I've used. I don't even know if I brought it up on the last podcast, but I've liked it. It's tried and true. And so I say, you know, if you're driving in a car, the check engine light goes off. It's telling you you're not going to be scared. You know, scared of that necessarily. You're going to pull over and say, what's going on under the hood?
Yeah.
So when anxiety shows up, it's a warning sign that emotions aren't being felt. So that's something I educate people on a lot. And then we start, and emotions aren't causing pain either. So we can't think that emotions aren't causing pain. It's the disavowing of it. It's the being scared of them, even though we don't even know we're scared of them.
Yeah. Is it, Sarna would talk so much about unconscious, and meaning like you're never going to be able to feel them, so or you're never going to know what they are. It was something along those lines. I guess, how can you help reconcile that for people where, you know, it's sort of the job of getting in touch with your emotions or understanding what they are, being able to work with them or whatever. But that seems a little counter to some of the stuff that Sarna would talk about in his books, where it'd be like it's unconscious, you're totally unaware of them.
You are. We can make the unconscious conscious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is possible. And I think that can happen with education and with the lack of fear of our emotions. I say fear, and I want to stop using that word, because fear is its own emotion. It's a primary emotion. Anxiety about our emotions. If we're less anxious about our emotions and we knock out those distorted beliefs about why it's not okay to feel feelings, our unconscious may be more likely to allow those feelings to arise and to come to the surface more. And we become more courageous and brave about our feelings. I think it's being scared of emotions that keeps them unconscious more than anything.
How do you work with somebody who, and maybe there's somebody listening to this podcast right now that's on a run, and all of a sudden their knee explodes in pain and they have the predisposition to freak out and run to the doctor, or run to the ER, or whatever. How can you be their little brain coach right now? And
yep.
What do you say to them? What do you do? What's the advice? Talk us through that.
Yeah. So, well, is it the first time?
Is this a question?
Or is it something that happens habitually?
Let's say every once in a while, a couple times a year.
Okay. So I would say for that person on that run is to remind themselves of that. This is an inconsistent pain signal. It's not the running.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully we've talked about that, you know, and they're further along enough to know this is a conditioned response. The best thing we could do after we've ruled out any, you know, actual injury is to keep running and to be working on your fear and your preoccupation with it, and to really go tap into that side of you that feels empowered and feels courageous and feels more knowing, all more understanding of what is happening while we're running and the pain's going, oh, okay, this is a conditioned response.
Yeah.
Right. And so we could do that cognitive reappraisal, you know, while we're running. If we stop and we baby it and all of that, we've now, you know, kind of made that conditioned response stronger, and our fear of our pain is running the show.
Is there, as we kind of wrap here, is there anything that I often refer to it as like the maintenance plan? But is there anything that you can advise people to do? Maybe it's somebody that that's listening to this that has been in pain in the past. They're not currently in pain, but they might be again at some point. Is there any sort of a regular practice, not something that's diligent where every day at 3 p.m. I'm going to do this thing, but right, just something where they can continue to work on themselves to base, you know, because I think it's kind of a muscle memory thing, right? Like if I don't do snatches every once in a while, or not every once in a while, if I don't do them regularly, that skill is going to ultimately fall off. So I train certain parts of the lift on a very regular basis, so that way I am competent in doing them. How does that relate to mind-body pain and pain in general? And what are a couple, if there are, a couple of things that people can do to continue sharpening that skill, sharpening that muscle?
I would say keeping up with the knowledge, you know, having it be on your radar still, short of any sort of obsession or fear of the pain coming back, you know, because that in and of itself would be something that could make fear come back, right? Because it could be anticipation. I would say just be the thinking, feeling, being, you know, and continuing with tapping in with emotions, feeling emotions, you know, being with emotions, not being scared of emotions, being authentic in our relationships, showing up, you know, and checking in on ourselves, you know, throughout the day, like we should, whether we have pain or not. You know, where am I at? How am I thinking? How am I feeling? Where's my stress level at? What am I needing? Am I expressing my needs in my relationships?
Yep.
You know, what am I feeling emotionally? You know, that question should be a question that we're using hopefully throughout the rest of our life, is just being curious. You know, coming from a place of curiosity is so important, rather than a place of anticipating that fear may come back.
Is there, continue.
Sorry, one other last thing. The guy running, you know, gets the knee pain. The other thing I would want to say about that real quick is that, you know, I think what I emphasize a lot in my practice now is it is not the body that's the issue. Or if we want to use the term TMS, let's just use that older term. That's not the TMS as much as it is all of the thoughts, the fears, and the reactions cognitively, emotionally, and behaviorally. That's TMS, is all that thought stuff, all those beliefs, right, that's generated in the brain. That's TMS more than the sensation. So we want to be top down. So when the guy's running, instead of focusing on, oh, the knee, it's working, remembering, top down, right? My understanding of my beliefs about this, what I've worked through so far, that kind of thing. And I think people don't always think of it that way, that, you know, it's these fear-based thoughts that are TMS just as much as any pain sensation in the body.
Yeah. Excellent.
People always try to fix the pain, right, from the body's perspective, rather than looking at what's going on in the brain.
Right. Is there anything else we didn't touch on? I know we went through a lot, and I promised about 30 minutes, and we're just at 30 minutes. Anything else that's top of mind or tip of your tongue in the last 1,801 days?
I guess just, you know, fearing pain. We got to take the fear out of the pain. We got to, you know, like, it's kind of like fearing TMS or mind-body pain or neurocircuit pain is like, you know, I came up with this stupid metaphor of like, or analogy, I always forget. It's fearing a shark with no teeth, so to speak.
Yeah.
So we have to kind of like take the fear out of the pain and what appears scary, and see it as, you know, it's just a sensation in my body. There's nothing to fear. And seeing that through our experiences. Oh, pain moves around. Okay, well, that can't possibly be something that's pathological or structural. That's not how the body works, right? Or conditioned response is not always happening. Or, you know, pain beliefs, you know, and seeing that an emotional trigger generated pain rather than a physical trigger. You know, all of these things take fear out of pain. So, you know, instead of it being a shark like it once was, it's a shark with no teeth that can't hurt us.
Yeah.
You know, and getting people to really get to that place where the fear or the pain feels sort of like an innocuous sensation.
How, if there's somebody listening to this that says, hey,
interpreted as an innocuous sensation, I should say.
Yeah. Sorry. If there's somebody listening to this and wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Best way would be to go to my website, which is painpsychologistla.com. PAINPsychologistla.com, and all my contact information is there.
Excellent. Don't hang up quite yet, but we'll end the interview, but don't hang up. But Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We'll chat down the road at some point.
Sounds great. Thanks, Eddie.